This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
On today's show, comedian Cameron James joins me to discuss his brand new stand-up comedy show, Mixtape. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I remember when mixtapes were a physical thing and not just a concept, here on Big Squid. Thank you for joining me here at the podcast today. This is a great chat with Cam. We, in typical form, plan to do a half-hour podcast. And my theory was if we record for half an hour and we aim for half an hour, when it gets to the 45-minute mark, at least we'll have only gone an hour and this podcast goes for 80 minutes. So there you go. These two idiots know how to talk. I've been helping him a little bit with his brand new show, just giving him someone to talk to about it and throwing some ideas around. And his show from last year was so fantastic. And I have a feeling that this one, Mixtape, is even better. I think he is going in a really interesting area. I think you see comedians who are funny in their careers. They discover the lane that they feel the most comfortable in, and it usually takes, you know, anywhere between 10 and 15 years. That's what I think anyway, 10 or 15 years to really find your voice. It's like you can be successful before then, but you find the lane. You find the lane that you want to be in, and once you decide that's where you're going to be, then there's this exponential improvement and joy that comes with that. And that's when some of my favorite comedians have taken their biggest steps forward. And I think Cam is right at the beginning of that next step. It started last year and it is continuing with Mixtape. So I was keen to talk to him about this and many other things, of course. Quite clearly, you've heard this podcast before. It begins with a tangent and there will be many more. But we do talk about the show eventually, and it's an exciting time for Cam, and he's about to be performing next at the Adelaide Fringe. So everyone in Adelaide, he's performing at my beloved Rhino Room. So please, if you have an opportunity and you want to see Cam because you enjoy him on this podcast, or you've enjoyed him on other podcasts, or maybe for some reason you don't know Cam, but you love comedy and you want to roll the dice on a smart, funny, and layered show, then this is the one that I would suggest that you check out. I'll pop back just for a brief chat at the end, but as I said, this is an 80-minute chat, so let's get right into it and welcome Cam James to the podcast. That's why I press record now and not before, so we can't get in trouble from whoever heard what we were talking about. I've already pre-recorded an introduction, so you don't have to worry about it, Cam. Oh, I haven't. Well, it'll be in the recording. Yeah.
Okay, so you're post-recording the pre-recorded prelude.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And you put it in post.
Yeah. I can't give up my Nolan ways. Even in a simple podcast, I still have to make everything super complicated.
Wow, the future, the past, and the present are all converging.
I know. It makes you feel hungry, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Should have put snacks out. So I had a very specific question that I wanted to ask you.
Which and is it about the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer?
Yes, it is. I gotta be honest, I have had no interest in anything Marvel for a while, and fuck, I laughed.
Man, I watched it and went, you know what? I'm back in the cinema for this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm back for this one. I know it.
Right, when it, because I was a bit skeptical.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're like, oh, what are they gonna do here? And then, I laughed immediately when I saw the rug that he was wearing on his head.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, already that's funny.
Yeah,
And then when the guys turned up and he was like, whoa, is that meant to be scary?
It's got a little Disney joke there.
Yeah, I'm not new to pegging. Disney is, and then that quick look. And that kind of humor, that glib humor seems to have run its course in pop culture for me in many ways.
Big time.
But when it doesn't mean it still can't be done well, and Deadpool is perfect for it. And
you know what's funny about Ryan Reynolds is I hate it in all his other projects,
right?
That style, but I like it from the Deadpool character.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about Ryan Reynolds in general when he's just sort of like handsome, hot dude in a rom-com being glib and smug, that drives, or an action movie, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But when he's got the disgusting prosthetics on or the suit, I can take it. I think it's because I'm not distracted by the fact that he's insanely beautiful.
Yeah,
it's funny.
It's more fun when he's manky Wade Wilson declaring that he's Marvel Jesus.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm excited.
Marvel Jesus seemed like a big swing as well for a... like, I know it's a throwaway comment, which is quite normal for us, but
for a Disney movie.
made me laugh. Big. It's big.
It's big. Yeah, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And I think, you know, it'll be fun to see Yellow Suit Wolverine and all the comic shit, like the Patch storyline seems like it's going to pop up.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, they're going to destroy a bunch of old... I think he's going to kill and fight a bunch of old Fox Marvel characters.
Yeah, wipe them out. Yeah. That's great. It seems like all the time-traveling shenanigans from the end of the second film seems like it's canon.
Yeah.
Like, I think he did go to DC and murder himself as Green Lantern. Like, that's a funny idea to me, to actually make that more than a joke.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And that there's repercussions.
Yeah. No, it's... I was pleasantly surprised. And to watch a trailer... To watch anything by yourself and laugh out loud...
Yeah.
That's rare.
Totally.
Like, invariably, you sort of sit there and, like, I'll voice it. Oh, that was funny.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
To actually laugh...
Yeah, it's very rare to laugh.
It's good as well. It's only one Marvel film.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, just... Like, the thing that was so annoying about... fucking hell, how did I get onto this?
Sorry for bringing it up. No. You had a question and then railroaded with Deadpool.
No, it's good. But one of my issues with... Because I was lucky enough to grow up in a time of great upheaval creatively with comic books. And, you know, because they were low art that nobody gave a shit about and everyone kind of pissed on, and then you had like Alan Moore turning up and saying, oh, look what I can do, and you went, oh, fuck, you know, and Neil Gaiman and Grant Morrison and, you know, all these artists like Colleen Duran, who also a writer, but Jewel Thompson, people like that just coming in with big ideas, and then it's like, and then it seemed like the movies were suddenly being big ideas again, and then as always, things make money and they become corrupted and they just repeat the same beats. And, you know, kids deserve more. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, kids should be seeing something and be what just happened? Like, be absolutely blown away.
Yeah. By. When was the last comic book film that you saw that made you have that feeling?
Yeah, good question. I reckon, when did Logan come out?
Wow. Yeah, 2017 or something.
2017. You know what? I do enjoy the back-to-back of Infinity War and Endgame.
I think that was pretty special.
Yeah. It was really... I just knew a couple of my friends' kids who were young enough to not really understand the broader machinations of how these things work, who were honestly devastated that Tom Holland's Spider-Man was gone and the Winter Soldier was gone.
And they had to wait a year.
And so I...
thinking these guys were dead.
They were dead. But they were too young to realize that, you know, they weren't reading that there's a Spider-Man that's already plugged in or anything. Yeah. They were old enough
they weren't
to...
weren't on Screen Rants looking at the leaked set photos and stuff.
Nah. And they were devastated.
Yeah.
And
that's exciting.
And it was... I didn't explain to them how it worked. I just kind of went, yeah, like, can you believe it? And so for a year, I just got to live in that world of their world.
Yeah.
So then they got the double devastation of, oh, they came back. Oh, but they all loved Iron Man, you know?
Yeah.
And they all loved Cap. Yeah. So they had those endings. And they all loved Black Widow.
Yeah.
So as a storytelling you know, over two films, you know, I know Endgame has its flaws, but for the most part, it's big swings.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I've got, I still feel something when I watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, during lockdown, we rewatched the whole, like, Infinity Saga, I suppose, again, and I just was moved by the end of it. And then I continued into this current saga and just felt so much deflation.
Yeah.
Of like, oh man, I just feel like we've eaten dessert and it was so rich and so rewarding and I'm full, and then someone's brought out a cheese course and I'm like, fuck.
Jesus.
Really? Yeah. We're still eating? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's, and also it weirdly banged on about things that happened but never really explored them properly. So there is, you talk about the blip, but what does that mean emotionally for people who didn't exist for 5 years?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that's really interesting to explore. I think they made a mistake. Like, it was really time to ground all their stories. Like, you know, I know Guardians of the Galaxy is a sci-fi, but I would have Shang-Chi, like Hugh Jackman's The Wolverine, like a really, really fun, great film, and then it has a big CGI ending. Like, The Wolverine should have finished with him fighting 99 ninjas in the snow. Get a choreographer in, give me 20-25 minutes of Wolverine just fighting ninjas. That's all I need. Blood splattering across the white snow. That's what I need. And Shang-Chi, it just should have been Marvel's Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee. 25 minutes of this guy who's really good at martial arts kicking the shit out of assholes.
It was pretty fun. It was maybe the most fun recent one.
I thought so too, yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It did end with some big CGI dragons and shit.
Yeah, and you're like,
do I care about these big dragons?
What is this?
You've got such a great cast of not only actors but physical performers.
Yeah.
Let them kick each other in the head.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to watch that.
Yeah, he's a really good lead. I just want to watch him be cool and charismatic. Yeah. And after a while, it was like, I think the Black Panther sequel is a pretty good sequel considering everything they were dealing
totally.
With.
Totally.
But how about the higher-ups just say, you know what, because the context of this film has changed, let's take Ironheart out. Let's not be in this movie that is genuinely saturated with the grief of losing the leading man. Let's take out this bit here, which is obviously trying to set up a Disney Plus TV show. And let's just sit in what we're experiencing and make it smaller. Like, actually make it smaller. Ant-Man. Why? I didn't even bother seeing Ant-Man, but why is Ant-Man going up against Kang? Like, Ant-Man...
Yeah.
Let's see a let's see a show, a movie where he's just fucking digging being famous and all the pitfalls that come with that. And he has to learn a lesson to be humble again while reconnecting with a daughter who, who thought he was dead for 5 years. There you go.
True, we didn't get that.
That chops 100 million off the film.
We got Star Wars, sort of, though. That's kind of what it was.
Was it? I just didn't even...
There's like a cantina. He goes into the fucking quantum realm and it's fucking Star Wars.
Right.
There's a little cantina. Bill Murray's there.
Right.
There's little alien sort of creatures wandering around. There's civilizations down there. It's weird.
It's Ant-Man. Lame. They didn't even have Michael Pena trying to tell a story badly.
Yeah. None of that stuff.
Give me that again. Yeah. That's funny shit.
Yeah, we like it.
Yeah. Now, everything doesn't have to be CGI endings. Like, just pull your budget right down.
Well, you should be running Disney.
Well, I'm sure I'd do a great job. Be the biggest losses in a quarter, and it turns out this 51-year-old guy knows absolutely nothing.
Well, how old's Bob Iger? You're probably younger than him.
Yeah, I'm definitely younger than him.
He's been in the game maybe a little longer, in the CEO game, than you.
You know, sorry, this is a real tangent, but Patricia, who listens to this podcast on a regular basis, came and saw me doing support for Peter Hellyer.
Yep.
And she wrote to me online saying that when she was in the lift, this woman who was in the front row said, "Oh, I really like that young comedian. He had a lot of energy." And I was like, I don't care if that woman was blind. I am fucking taking that.
That's great. I mean, I say this as a friend. You look fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I have another friend who told me that I shouldn't get too confident about feeling like I look younger, because I definitely look my age, maybe a little bit older. And she has heaps of gay friends and who are my age who look heaps better than me. So... So, you know, I'll just take this as a cancellation. So, thank you.
Love it when people are that blunt with you. It's disgusting. How dare they? Everyone should pander all the time.
Well, you don't even have to pander. You could just not say anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I wasn't even...
That's an option.
Mate, it was... It just kind of came out of left field. But the thing is that she said this to me a few times. And you sit there going... Like... I'm not an idiot. I see photos of myself. Like, I know that when I turn 50, I will never take a good photo again. Like, I know that time's over. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, every photo, I look a little bit like a perfect scoop of vanilla ice cream that was magnificent in the ice creamery, and you've just taken it outside and the first ray of sunlight has hit it, and immediately that ice cream's gone a bit. Every photo. It's a fucking disaster. But I've come to terms with that. But you know what you don't need to do? You don't need to shove this in my face. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
If I'm paying for dinner, you know what pays for that fucking dinner? Is my rock solid self-esteem to go out there and perform. And if you're going to keep bludgeoning it, it turns out maybe you'll need to get the next dinner, because I won't be able to do gigs.
Is this friend a performer?
No.
Okay. Yeah. A performer would never say that shit.
Nah.
I mean, they'd think it.
Oh, they'd fucking think
it. They'd say it to other people.
They'd say it to other comedians. Don't you worry about that. There's probably a whole secret Facebook group entitled "Hammo's Looking Terrible."
Hammo's looking his age. Oh, you look fantastic. You look great. You look very youthful.
Mate, I'm going to take all of that.
Yeah,
I will take you out to lunch and dinner. Don't worry about that. I'll fucking take these compliments where I can get them. Anyway, so that wasn't the question.
No. Sorry for the diversion. I just watched it and thought, oh, we need to discuss it. But anyway.
I was going to bring it up, though.
Okay.
Because I was even thoroughly appreciated not giving us Wolverine.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
I think it was smart. Reddit hated it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
The Marvel subreddit were just furious.
Great.
I'm like, you got to understand, this is the marketing.
Yeah.
It's making you want to see him more.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing, and it's working.
I think we have to split fandom into proper fandom and toxic fandom. And toxic fandom, if you give toxic fandom what they want, they turn on you.
Yeah.
So you have to find a way to give them stuff, but don't...
Yeah.
Don't hand it to them.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Actually, here's another tangent. Did you happen to see the Colbert Christopher Nolan interview?
No, I didn't.
It's great. But it has one of the most... The advert for it is mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. It's Stephen Colbert telling Nolan it's just going to be a straight-up interview and it's not going to be time-jumping and all of that. And Nolan very seriously going, okay. And then it immediately cuts to Colbert as Oppenheimer. And he's, you know, doing his Oppenheimer bit and he's looking at raindrops and that. And then the rain just starts getting heavier. And then he turns around and he yells at Nolan, who's there with a sprinkler spraying him. And then he asks him to turn it down and Nolan says, sorry. And then he turns it up even more. And I think he swears at Nolan and then he chases him to the Benny Hill music.
Oh, my God.
And it feels like I'm making it up, doesn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. And I was looking at that going, my guy. My guy.
Crazy.
Just when I thought I couldn't love you anymore. You're doing an interview with Colbert, who I love.
Yeah.
And the two of you are running around to the Benny Hill music.
I haven't watched it yet, but I saw on YouTube yesterday that Christopher Nolan moderated a... interview with Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie about The Curse, because he loves The Curse.
You know,
I thought, well, that's kind of fun that he's... I don't think we've ever seen Christopher Nolan sort of engage with the culture outside of his own stuff.
In a while. Yeah, well, I think there is, you know, big chance that Oppenheimer will do well at the Oscars, and so I've always thought that he, like, his wife, you know, one of the most successful producers of the 20th century, she was asked, what's something that frustrates you about criticisms or anything? She says that he doesn't have a sense of humour. He said his movies have heaps of jokes. It's like when people talk about the Dark Knight trilogy, they talk about how serious it is. And it's like, there's heaps of jokes all the way through all three films, all the way. And it's just that they're not... They're not the glib Ryan Reynolds.
They're not just Whedonisms.
They're jokes within the context. Like, I stand by Kenneth Branagh's performance in Tenet as a really funny performance, who is playing it like a Bond villain. Do you know what I mean? It all comes down to the thunk his body makes when it hits the boat. It's like that's such a visceral sound and funk, and it's a real choice, and you go, fuck, that's funny, you know. So you know, his favorite Fast and the Furious film is the one that most people dismiss, which is Tokyo Drift.
I like Tokyo Drift
as well. Oh, you and Nolan, right?
Yeah,
you know, so he
I think it's totally underrated.
I think Oppenheimer's really funny, which you haven't
still
seen
haven't
yet
seen.
But they're jokes in the characters. They're in context. They're not breaking the fourth wall.
I think Memento's funny.
Memento's, like when he's, okay, am I chasing this guy or is he chasing me?
Great.
Oh, he's chasing me.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Because I read the original short story that it's adapted from.
Yeah.
And it's not funny. The short story is really dark.
Yeah.
And quite different. And then the movie has a bit of a sense of humor about the whole situation of the guy's in and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's cool. The guy's funny. We've got to give it to him.
Yeah, there's jokes in there. Adam, Richard and I went and saw Interstellar at the new IMAX, because the new IMAX is... Adam's partner hadn't seen it. He's sitting there and all the things that are happening. There's jokes all the way through that as well, you know. Anyway, fuck.
Two tangents.
Don't make a right turn into this question. So your new show has a lot of music in it.
Yes.
Have you been tarred and feathered with the musical comedian? Not tarred and feathered, I love musical comedy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Do people kind of say that about you now? Because I've always just thought of you as a comedian.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I think I am, but I think if I'm on a lineup where I am playing guitar, guess what? I'm a musical comedian on that lineup. Even if half my set is me talking and the other half is a song or whatever, I'm still the musical comedian on the thing. And I avoided that label for the longest time. I couldn't stand the label musical comedian. But then I kept thinking about it and I thought, well, I love Tim Minchin.
Yeah.
I love Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
I love Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
I love, who else do I love as a musical comedian? I loved Smart Casual when they were around.
Oh, yeah. Tripod, are you leaving Tripod?
I love Tripod.
Yep.
Why am I shying away from it? I've never judged them. I like all of their stuff. I even like, one of my first comedians that I loved when I started out doing stand-up was Zach Galifianakis,
mm-hmm.
and his set was him sitting at a piano telling one-liners while he was noodling on the piano, doing kind of jazzy chords.
Yeah.
Dimitri Martin used to do a similar thing with the guitar, and I loved all that. And I've never judged any of those guys as being bad at musical comedy. And then I recently saw Kat Cohen, who is also, I guess, technically a musical comedian in the way that I am too, in that she does songs, but then between the songs she's doing bits and telling stories and jokes and then segueing into another song.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the big realization I had, which was for this new show, which you've been helping me out on, I've got songs and stories that sort of go together, you know,
like
the stories will lead into the song and then the song will end and then the story will pick back up again. And I honestly thought that I had invented a new form of entertainment.
Yeah.
I thought, I've just invented something crazy here. It's stand-up comedy, but the songs kind of like naturally come in and out of the story.
Yeah.
And then my friend Henry said, oh, you mean like musical theater and cabaret? And I was like, oh, fuck.
Shut up, Henry.
So you're telling me I've just somehow become not only a musical comedian, but possibly cabaret?
Wow.
That made me feel sick to my stomach.
Mate, one day I'll come to watch you perform and you'll have this glitter mask on and I'll be like, oh, fuck. He's chock full of the burlesque herpes.
I've invented this wonderful new thing. I'm going to bring meals out while people are watching the show. Yeah,
this is great. Getting back to your roots.
Yeah, you can have dinner and a show. It's brand new. I've just thought of it.
Yeah. That is so funny. That's the equivalent of my friend telling me that you look your age.
Yeah. It was. It
Come on,
hurt.
Henry.
It really stung. It stung. But then I just, I'm at a point of acceptance in my life where I just am like, well, this is what I am. I guess if, you know, if it... If it quacks like a duck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it has feathers, it's a duck.
Yeah.
And I do ultimately have songs in my act. So technically, I guess I'm a musical comedian.
Well, guess what it means? You're not. You're not being billed as a middle-aged white comedian.
Yeah, that's another good thing.
So that's a good thing, right?
That's another good thing.
Oh, no, I'm not. No, I'm not like them. I got a guitar.
Yeah, I'm different.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, that was also one of my biggest concerns. I remember a year or so ago, I was on a line up with Will Anderson, who's however old he is.
50. Just turned 50.
And he's
good too.
He's great.
He's very happy about being 50.
Yeah, good. He made a joke about middle-aged white guys on the lineup and he included me in that group. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, wow.
That also struck a chord.
You're actually not middle-aged.
I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm 36.
Yeah.
But I guess that's middle age. That's sort of middle age, I suppose.
I thought middle age started at 40.
I guess you can say from whatever point. I guess I'm a married man too, and so that's all part of it.
So traditional.
Maybe it's just all part of it. So yeah, having the guitar, you're right. It's keeping me separated from the pack.
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's good. And your songs are really clever as well. I think maybe what happens is because musical comedy is in many ways more difficult to master than not more difficult to master, but has a different degree of difficulty. Like sometimes you'll get newbies who are really good musicians, but they're not funny.
Yeah.
Like they're mildly amusing,
but
they're not like... You sit there for like 7 minutes during one song going, this was one idea stretched out way too long.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or they are funny enough, but they're kind of not very good at music, you know? And so it's like this jingly jangly shit that's coming at you.
Yeah, just repetitive chords.
Yeah, and there's not many of them, so it's easier to have a more dismissive attitude towards it because you see... at the lower levels, more bad musical comedy than you just see stand-up.
Definitely, yeah.
So it's not something that you should, like, you should embrace.
There's so much dread involved. When being an audience member too, at an open mic and seeing someone come up with a keyboard or an acoustic guitar can inspire dread, because there is a part of you that thinks, am I just going to listen to a bad song now?
Yeah.
And that's maybe worse than listening to bad stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at least with a bad stand-up, you can like daydream and think about other things until the guy's over. But when it's a bad song, you just have to listen to it.
Yeah.
You're listening to repetitive, boring shit.
And also because it's a song, you automatically will give them a round of applause when they finish, even if you didn't like it.
And then that makes you resent them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, I've written my share of bad songs.
So, you know, like I had 5 years of doing it.
Yeah, because you were in a musical comedy duo.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, not every song hit. And, you know, sometimes you take swings and you... Mm-hmm. It's fucking hard when you're halfway through something going, oh, this isn't working, or totally. I've forgotten something or whatever. Always got a round of applause though. So
yeah, that's true. It's almost...
it's ingrained. They're the rules.
Yeah, it's like, thank God. Thank God we have this social contract where you have to clap even if you're not laughing.
Yeah.
But no, I really like overthink that whole side of it, because I, as you know, and like maybe the last time I was on this show, we talked about it a bit. That it was that I started playing in bands and I wanted to be a musician my whole life.
Yeah.
Then I eventually became a stand-up. And for most of my stand-up career, I haven't incorporated music because I've had too much love and respect for music. And I didn't want to write something shitty.
Yeah.
And then every now and then I would dabble. I would have a song in a show, or if I worked on a sketch show and I had to write some comedy songs for that. And that was fun and exciting and I enjoyed the experience, but I definitely found it hard because there's the side of me that just wants to write a really good catchy pop song, and then there's the side of me that wants every line to be funny and a joke. Yes. And that's the balance that's really difficult to get.
This might be a chicken or egg thing, but do you start with a joke and then find a tune that fits, or do you have a tune that it suddenly just lends itself to a certain cadence of words where you find the joke, or is it just...
I think a bit of both.
Yeah, a bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like some of my... Like my song Boys Night, which is in the show and I'm about to put out as a single, actually, is a riff that I've been doing for about 5 or 6 years just while I'm mucking around on the guitar. It's very repetitive, but it's nice chords.
Yeah.
Nice kind of like... funk chords, like a little soul voicings, and I've always mucked around with it, and then just a melody grew out of that. But then there's other ones where I've thought, I'd like to have a song that's about this type of thing, and then I've reverse engineered from there.
Okay.
But finding the chorus is always the hard part.
Yeah.
It's always, because I want the chorus to be sing-alongy and catchy, but not repetitive and annoying.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
That's hard. Do you have any rules that you apply to the songs? Like, do you sometimes, like, can they only be a certain amount of time, or is there anything that you stick to, or do you just kind of instinctively feel it out?
I think instinctively, but my instinct is always shorter the better.
Yes.
I always think under 2 minutes is good. But then some of them are longer because they've just earned it over time, you know?
Yeah.
And I can tell that there's still an appetite there, so I can drag it out for another verse
or
add a bridge in that changes it up or something. But I reckon the shorter the better. I love that Adam Sandler special from 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, at all the different venues?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that was great.
It's amazing. It's so funny and so cool. But his songs are, you know, like 40 seconds long sometimes. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I've got any that short.
Yeah.
Maybe I've got one that's 45 or 50 seconds, but I'd love that. That would be so good if you could almost treat each song like just a joke.
Yeah.
Here's one joke. It's going to be 30 seconds long and then it's done.
You know, I reckon when back in the fucking last century, when I was in the Bunzel Boys, I reckon that's when our act really kind of took a level up, when we found funnily enough, finding a way to do shorter songs was like was kind of like the next step. You would have thought you would have started with that, but I think we were trying to stick to song structure kind of things, and then having really fun for like if you just have like a one joke song parody that you can do for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm not saying this is the best thing in the world, but it used to make us laugh. We always used to talk about when Pearl Jam last toured and Eddie Vedder came over to our house and he wanted to make some toast, and then he had to ask us, "Can't find the butter, man." Like, you know, you, it's like 7 seconds, you're in and out, and then you just keep moving. Like, it's almost like you don't wait for any response. You just, or we had one song that was really good for dropping in, like an original song. But we could, especially song parodies, we could drop the song parodies into it. So the song was always changing. But, you know, we had a Chris Isaak song that was... Sorry, I am just remembering this. We had a Chris Isaak parody, which was about Jeffrey Dahmer, called Somebody's Frying. And
Great.
Like... It's just not going to fit. Like, it's too much to come up with a premise to have an excuse to say it.
Yeah.
But you just had this song that had this original song that had, like, three parts that you could... And then you could just drop in your little dumbass song parody.
Yeah.
In the middle, and it just kind of made sense. but it's good to have a rule, because if you think, okay, they've got to be less than 2 minutes, then when you're breaking the rule... There's a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe another little unwritten rule was I don't want like a long chorus that's the same every time you hear it.
Yes.
I love it in real songs. I love to have a song with a refrain that you can keep coming back to and sing along to.
Yeah.
And I love a hook, but I think in a comedy song, you may as well give them a different joke every time you're coming back to the chorus.
Yes.
You know, if it's, this is stand up after all.
Yes.
They don't want repetition in that way. Maybe melodic repetition is fine, but yeah, give them a different couple of jokes every time you're going to the chorus. I just re-listened to Tenacious D's first album because it's 20 years since that came out.
Jesus.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no, all right. Maybe I do look my age.
And I loved it. I kind of forgot how much I used to love those guys too, because they barely do choruses.
Yes.
They're pretty much just like joke after joke after joke.
Yeah.
And there's melodies that recur.
Yeah.
But pretty much it's just a bunch of verses that are all funny.
Mate. Have you ever seen them live?
Never.
I saw them live after, like, it must have been, I can't remember, maybe 6 months, a year after that album dropped. And it is honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The ongoing joke of, there would be times where Jack Black would take the microphone out of the stand and he'd swing his arm around, the mic stand would go flying and someone would have to come out and put it up for him. And every time he did it, every time he took the mic out, everyone I was with would be like, oh, here he goes. And he'd knock it over and some poor stage manager would come out and put it up. And then right towards the end, this probably loses in the translation, but he knocked it down and the stage hand came out and put it up. And just as the stage hand walked off, he'd knocked it over again. So the stage hand came straight back out, never changed expression, just kind of put it up and then just walked off again. Like, it was, it's such a small thing, but it's like this guy... This guy gets exactly what he's parodying.
Totally. It's insane how good his voice is too. Another thing I sort of forget is that he's genuinely a fantastic singer.
It's it was the big revelation at the end of High Fidelity.
Yeah, God, I love High Fidelity.
Because John Cusack's character, I know a few people have watched it now and said, God, this guy's awful. And you go, yeah.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm. He's awful.
Yeah.
And he's so dismissive of his character. And then when he sings at the end and everyone's like, oh, shit, he is actually singing like Marvin Gaye.
It did kind of make me think, because I love High Fidelity and I love School of Rock.
Yes.
Why aren't there more movies where Jack Black is singing? Every now and then he'll do a little something.
Yeah.
But he's never playing a musician or anything like that. And it's one of his greatest skills is that the guy can sing.
You know what he should be doing? Here we go.
Here we go.
When we take over Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're 30 years younger than everyone else.
Yeah.
Well, in your case, 54. A retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac, but with music.
Wow.
And it's Jack Black, who is the beautiful singer-songwriter who's helping the dumbass handsome guy.
Yeah, that's great. The woman. He's the one who can do the seducing with the singing and the... Yeah. Poetic language.
Yeah.
And then we get some hunk.
Yeah. Some who's very good hunk. At miming.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see a scene?
Such a left field idea. I like it.
Mate, who doesn't want to see a scene where he's trying to sing, the good looking guy's trying to sing to the woman in the balcony and Jack Black is desperately trying to set up his keyboard and little portable sound system and trying to set up his battery.
Great idea.
Lots of slapstick. You know, the battery's running out, the guy's voice is quickly having to plug it into the backup generator. Who doesn't want to see that?
We should maybe be managing other artists' careers.
Maybe we should.
I do think about that sometimes.
Yeah.
I know exactly what I would do with that person.
Yeah.
And how to make their legacy last forever.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you reckon Jack Black's listening?
JB, if you're out there and you're listening.
If anyone's friends with him, let him know we've come up with a rocking idea.
Oh, my God. So, speaking of friends with him, I'm friends with Ben Lee, the singer-songwriter.
Yes.
Amazing musician.
Yes.
And when I saw Tenacious D were touring Australia... I was talking to Ben Lee at the time and I said to him, hey, I saw Tenacious D coming out. I'd love to open for them. And then Ben Lee wrote back to me and said, I'll message Jack now. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Right. Wow.
Okay. So you just have Jack's number and you can just text him and say, hey, my friend should open for you.
Look,
by the way, haven't heard back.
No.
So probably not going to happen. But
you threw it out there.
It's crazy.
How can you have a bit of luck go your way if you don't put it out there?
I know. It's just crazy that he even has his number. But
well, you know, when are they touring?
July.
Well, this gives us a good few months to write up a synopsis. Mm. And
For Cyrano.
Well, we can call it Roxanne and we can have him singing Roxanne.
That's true. Was the Steve Martin one was Roxanne?
Yeah, but he'll have to change the lyrics.
Yeah, this is Roxanne the
musical. Maybe he's, her name's Roxanne, he starts doing that. No, we can't do that, mate. Have you listened to the lyrics? So it's a song parody of he makes Roxanne palatable.
All right, let's do it. All right, well, maybe make a 10-page treatment.
I can't. It's an exciting moment when you realise that you've just become millionaires.
Like,
not right now, God. But the idea.
Yeah.
Here it is. And you're all listening to it. So you're welcome, everyone who's listening to it. You can say, oh, yeah, I heard it when they first came up with the idea.
We were there when they came up with the Cyrano de Bergerac musical starring Jack Black and Zac Efron, probably.
Why not? He's handsome. I don't know. Like, let's fucking aim for the stars. Let's get Timothy Chalamet playing, like docile. He's got a good sense of humor. Or Austin Butler.
Yeah. Oh, Austin Butler.
Jesus shit.
He'd be great.
Because he knows how to mime.
Yep. Knows how to mime.
Just have him playing this really sweet guy who's a bit of a dimwit.
Love it.
But he doesn't know how to win over this woman.
I still haven't seen. Yeah, it'll be Zendaya.
Yeah,
let's just get the whole cast of Dune in here.
Absolutely.
Get Josh Brolin. Yeah, and Javier
Bardem.
Let's ask
Denis Villeneuve to direct it in IMAX. It'll be the first comedy musical at IMAX.
Oh, God.
Have you ever written a great tune, added really funny lyrics to it, and then at some point been furious that you've ruined what could have been a great pop song?
No, I think I always assume that they're all great pop songs.
Oh,
in
right,
a way.
Great, yeah.
But I have definitely written a really catchy, really good pop song, and then I made the lyrics funny, and I thought, this is going to be a fucking hit. Every audience is going to love this. And it just got nothing.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't understand why.
It's devastating.
And then I think I thought about it later and I went, it was too good.
Yeah.
That's what the answer was. It was just too good because... Yep. There was too much going on. Mate. People were listening to a great song, but they were also having to concentrate on these fucking dumb lyrics.
Mate, it's a fucking disaster. You know what you did is you brought a $40 cheese along to a five-year-old's birthday
exactly.
party.
Exactly.
The kid's palate's not fucking ready for it.
Exactly. I think my big lesson was simplify.
Yes.
Simplify. Anytime you think, this is great, I'm doing all these cool things, intricate things, melodically, it's moving here and there. There's too much going on. You need to just strip it back.
What?
Keep the audience, like, just feed them custard. That's kind of what they want a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sprinkle cinnamon or chocolate or whatever on top of that.
A way that you could do something intricate is the point of the song is you keep doing intricate.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Things, but you know that nobody wants it.
Do you know
what I mean?
That's true. If you make that the point of it, like, which is what Tenacious D do quite a bit. They'll go big on the, like, vocal gymnastics or guitar solos when it's just a song about, like, fucking farting or whatever.
Yeah.
Fighting a bear or something. It's totally unnecessary. And that's the joke.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's, it's a funny thing. I talked about this with a few other comics that play music in their set. And
do you have a secret Facebook group?
No.
Nobody understands this Facebook group.
Bombing with an instrument is especially hard.
Right. I always think about it with the people who play keyboard because it takes so long to take it off.
I know, and they had to come in early and plug it in and test it out.
Make sure that the DI was there and there's a boom mic so they can sing over the top and you lose the energy. On a bad comedy night, it takes ages to set up and you lose whatever energy you have, and then if it doesn't go well, you've then got to pick up a massive heavy thing and walk off.
I played a music festival on the weekend in Tasmania.
Oh, did you? Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's this festival down there called Party in the Paddock.
Yeah.
And they do a little comedy stay. Like, there's an arty tent that has smaller acts in it.
Yeah.
And they put comedy in there at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I've
done
a bunch of music festival comedy tents in the past. I've done so many. I'm sure I'll do many more. I reckon this was the best one I've ever done. I had to do a half hour set, and there were two great comics, Ben Hunter and Alex Hudson, on before me doing 15 minutes each. And then I had to do half an hour. I was so nervous, but it was a blast. I don't know. I can't explain. I think I played more songs than I normally would. And it was all under the context of, this is a music festival, so I'm playing music. I kind of framed almost my whole set like, I'm headlining Party in the Paddock.
Yeah.
This is my dream has been to play music festivals.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to fucking go for it here and play all my songs.
Yeah.
I think I did 5 songs in half an hour with bits in between. And I mainly was leaving my guitar on and like noodling while I was doing the jokes.
Oh,
and
yeah, great.
It felt awesome.
Yeah.
I actually felt like, wow, this is, maybe I should be doing more of this. Just
like maybe
mucking around and
maybe.
Yeah. Telling the jokes and stories while I'm sort of playing some pretty chords underneath it. And
well, you know, one of the great things about where your career is at is, you know, I think there was an evolutionary step in your presentation of how you put together a show in your last show.
Sure, yeah, and with your help.
Oh, yeah, but it's the but maybe this is the next step. Like, you know, because this your new show feels like a very smart consolidation of what you learnt from the previous show. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you are, here you go. Here's a good metaphor for you. If your last show was Kid A, this is Amnesiac.
Oh, that's fantastic.
There you go.
That's good. That's good.
If your last show was Low, this is Heroes. Like, you know?
The Berlin Trilogy.
Mate, I'm a big believer in if you're going to make a metaphor, always make sure that you or the person you're talking about is an absolute star in it.
I always
talk about... Oh, I was at a party. I felt like Tom York at the Grammys. And it's like, yeah, I'm comparing myself to Tom York. But so maybe that will be the next step. The new show, how are we talking about it? Because I know it back to front, I'll let you,
you know,
describe it because I'm not sure.
Secrets.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been finding that hard to figure out how to talk about it because – obviously, the way I see the show and probably the way you see it, because you've helped me out with it and watched it, is different to how I'm probably going to have to talk about it to people because I don't want to spoil what it's really about.
Yeah.
But I think that I still keep saying, you know, it's almost my boogie nights. It's it's about me as a young man in 2009 getting a job at a dinner theatre restaurant and climbing the ranks within that.
Yeah.
And learning lessons along the way.
Yeah.
And I think that was the original idea was let's do boogie nights, but it's about my time at the theatre restaurant.
Yeah.
And my ego grows.
Yeah.
And there's lots of music and then I have to learn a valuable lesson. And I think my lesson that I learn is different to the one Dirk Diggler learns.
Absolutely.
In Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
And he's got a larger penis than me as well.
Mate, there's anyone who's hoping to come along and see Cameron James reveal a fucking monster cock is going to be disappointed.
Although in the current iteration, the whole show does end with a dick joke. So
that is true.
Yeah, so it's not that dissimilar in a way.
And it's the biggest song of the show.
That's true. It's the longest song of the show.
Okay,
well.
So metaphorically.
Yeah, metaphorical. Yeah. But that's kind of what I've been thinking of it as. And I love those sorts of movies like Boogie Nights and Magic Mike and stuff where it's usually about someone getting swept up in a world that's larger than them and it's crazy and it's exciting and intoxicating and they lose themselves a little bit and then they have to find themselves again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what the show is. Great. I'm glad you suggested that because it's... Yeah, it's because it has layers to it that get revealed as the show moves along.
Yeah,
That's a perfect summation.
I've been unsure of whether I should talk about the other stuff. Like, is it best being a surprise? What do you think?
You know, it like the movies that you've talked about. There's lessons learned. There's mistakes made. There's moments of romance that go pear-shaped.
Yeah.
You know, you can say that.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
You know, it's an easy show to follow. There's a simple through line that's very definitive. But if you're paying attention, it has lots of layers that audiences get more out of. But you can also just sit there and laugh and then...
Yeah.
And then things are revealed at the end that you can go, oh...
Yeah, absolutely.
The night that I saw it, there was definitely people locked in who were across everything, and there were a few people there who were just laughing, and then
then by the end they go, oh,
literally the noise in front of us was a couple doing that, you know. So
yeah, that's nice. It is
that's
very
great.
Nice. I've found because I just did Perth. I did five nights in Perth, and it's been fun watching audiences that don't know me at all and haven't really listened to me and podcasts talking about my personal life.
Yeah.
Hearing them realize the thing, you know, realizing what's happening when it's all coming together at the end is really sweet. And I think I had this realization where I kind of thought, wow, I've made something as close to a rom-com in a way that I could ever possibly make, I think.
Yeah.
In a strange way.
Yeah,
you know, I set out to do Boogie Nights and it ended up having a slight more rom-com element to it, but that's nice.
You know, like it's probably a word that we don't associate with comedy or want to associate with comedy, but it's sweet. But it, once again, it has so many different flavors all the way through it.
Yeah,
that it's not saccharine. It's just there's a sweetness to it all the way through. The one of the things that I love about the presentation of the show is with the songs, you have the videos that you've made and the lyrics going up. That I haven't seen that before.
Me neither.
Yeah, so let's fucking claim this one for you.
Yeah.
The clips are great.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're great. Like, I won't mention the song, but the one with all the cars.
The first one.
Just, there's a repetition to it that is just kind of perfect, you know?
Yeah, I just kept thinking about karaoke videos.
Yes.
When you go to a karaoke night and there's stock footage,
mate,
with lyrics and they sort of... The stock footage sort of makes sense to the song, but it's a bit weird.
Mate, my favourite one back in the day was there was a place that we used to do karaoke and it was Tears in Heaven.
Yeah.
And it was random footage of a hot lady with a camel in the desert.
okay.
And none of us wanted to sing the song, so none of us would pick it. But anytime it'd come up, we'd go, here comes a lady, tears in heaven. She must be so sad because she's so hot.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, I downloaded, I went through a bit of a phase a little while ago of downloading from YouTube bizarre karaoke videos.
Yeah.
And there was one that I loved. It was Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah.
And the video, it must be in Europe somewhere. It looks like a European city, like Amsterdam. It's just two guys constantly running into each other on the street and giving each other big hugs and shaking each other's hands and then partying again. And then the next scene is them running into each other again at a cafe, doing a big hug and shaking hands. It sort of makes a little bit of sense.
Sure.
It's like, oh, these guys love each other or something.
Yeah, they're really good friends.
It's powerful. Yeah. That's the power of love.
You know, if anyone makes karaoke videos out there, Becky Lucas. Becky, look, you know, I've been friends with Becky for a long time, but something has happened where, you know, she's about to become a mum, and I'm getting older, and I think both of us are becoming soft in our old age, and we send clips of, like... men doing good things and like at sporting events and being overwhelmed with emotion. And she sent me a clip the other day that I was just like, oh, I don't know if I can cope with this. And it was a family taking their son on a cruise, but they hadn't told their son that his best friend and their family was coming on the cruise with him. And the other family hadn't told their son. And they filmed the moment when these two best friends realized they were going to be on a cruise together. And they're these little chubby kids who kind of look at each other. And like the joy of the person that they love is going to be with them. And then there's all these family snaps.
Oh, that's so
anyway,
cute.
Add that. If you make karaoke,
I love
find
that stuff.
Add that to the power of love.
Yeah, of course. Add that in there. That's perfect. But that was I think that was the original intention behind those little videos.
They're so funny.
I love karaoke videos. I love the lyrics being on the screen. And I thought, if I've got these songs,
yes,
I may as well do something fun with that and make it a little bit of a karaoke event.
It's great, but also it just, like, it helps land the jokes. Mm. Like, it's such a smart move. And also, I'm going to speak obliquely because I don't want to give it away, but that specific first video,
that song,
the clip's really funny because of what you're singing.
Yeah,
it's nothing,
true.
Like, it's a complete contrast to the song,
to the realities of the song.
So if you kind of, once again, that's what I mean about the show being heavily textured.
You could pepper jokes in there.
You could just look and go, "Oh, there's a video."
Yeah,
and you could, "Oh, look, there's the lyrics." But if you pay attention to the clip while you're singing,
yeah,
it's really funny.
Yeah, I think it's fun. It's been fun to do that. It's cool to just sort of get as many jokes in as you can to distract from the fact that people are watching a narrative. Because I kind of almost want people to not realize that they're watching a narrative until the end.
Yeah.
And then they kind of go, "Oh, wow, that was all related." So you may as well go, "Hey, here's some funny videos, there's some songs, there's some, you can watch the lyrics."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun doing it. I can't wait to do it in Adelaide and Melbourne and everywhere. I'm like, very excited about it. I'm having a blast. Also, because, you know, the last show was all about how I wished I was a musician, basically.
Yeah.
And this show, I'm like, well, fuck, I'm a musician. I'm doing it. I'm going to be a musician now.
Yeah. Do you ever think you'll... I think that, by the way, I think this show is a step up, and last show was great.
Oh,
but I think there's a newfound confidence. Not necessarily like the confidence as a performer is the same, but there's a confidence in approach.
And oh wow!
Knowing what you can do, and I think that's it's really invigorating to see. All the comedians who were at your trial show, which was a show, let's be honest. It was pretty big for a trial show.
Yeah, it was bizarre.
Like, trial shows are meant to be like 11 people.
That's what I thought was happening.
Suddenly it's like a full audience and that.
Yeah.
But everyone was kind of commenting on that. And I think we talked on the night, but I brought a friend along who I deliberately did not tell her anything about it other than she knows you and she likes you.
Yeah.
So she had no idea what was about to be presented, and she picked up on everything.
Yeah, that's good.
Which was great.
That's cool.
Before we get into, anyway,
just look at the time.
When I spoke to you on the phone, I said, "Look, let's aim for half an hour. So then, when we hit the 45-minute mark, we'll come in at a nice hour." And we're coming up to an hour. So just a couple of quick questions before we plug where we can see the show.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Would you release serious songs?
No, I don't think so. No. I love it when other people do it. Like Brett from Flight of the Conchords has a album out that's mostly not funny. Right. Tim Heidecker from Tim and Eric has put multiple albums out that are kind of becoming more earnest with each one.
Right.
And I know Tim Minchin is kind of touring a show at the moment that's got a combination of serious songs and comedy songs.
Mm.
I don't think I ever would. I think I like the challenge of doing both at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, the reason that I'm enjoying it is because I'm trying to write a funny song that sounds good.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would. But there's funny musos that are like, you wouldn't call them comedy musicians, like Randy Newman, for example.
Oh,
Tom Waits.
They might be giants.
They might be giants.
You know, like it's, I remember Elvis Costello. Elvis Costello.
Yeah.
Very funny,
great
in a song.
Yeah.
But Elvis Costello hosting Rage said that he thought they might be giants he wasn't saying this as a criticism, but he was saying their songs are so catchy and so poppy and so perfect. And, you know, if they were singing about something a little bit blander, they'd probably be
massive.
But instead they're singing about
Dr. Worm.
Oh, yeah, and you know, and stuff like that. So, it's the pitfalls of being a comedian is at some point you want to stretch yourself and write something serious. And then, but how many rock stars do we see who in between songs try to do 10 minutes of stand-up?
I know.
But it's, you're always going to want to try and...
Do you know what's funny, though? There. Like, he's not a great example of a man these days, but because he's said some quite controversial things in his time. But I saw Morrissey live.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was basically doing 5 or 6 minutes of material between every song.
Right.
And it was killing.
Killing.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
It was very difficult to watch because he was just kind of the whole package a little bit. He was so funny and the songs are great.
Regardless of, well, he writes funny songs as well.
He does.
You know?
He's a very funny song.
Regardless of some of his views, he's a clever man.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that does not surprise me.
Yeah, and Tom Waits is funny. Ween, there's so many. I think it would be a fun thing maybe in the future to try and do a show that's almost just a music show. Just back-to-back songs with minimal story.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm there yet, but I think that would be a fun challenge. And maybe not all songs need to be a laugh every line. You can just have some songs that are a bit softer and then they build to a laugh.
Well, if you're doing that, you can.
Mm.
You know, like if with the amount of songs you have in this show, they have to all be funny.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're doing a show of songs, then you can...
Yeah,
once
you can
again,
pace it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That'd be fun to see. What about, you know, this is I'm thinking 10 years down the track now. So say you continued the music side of things. What about soundtracks or stuff like that? Would that be something?
That would be so good.
That'd be good.
I'd love to have a bit of a dual career where you're sort of a little bit taken seriously as a musician. Like, not... You know, I don't think I ever will be or want to be like just a musician, but it would be kind of cool to be taken a little seriously as it. Again, I'm using Brett from Fly the Conchords as an example a lot lately, but he wrote a lot of the songs for the Muppet movie that came out in whenever that was, 2012 or 13, 14, and fucking won an Oscar for one of those songs.
Yeah.
I love that song. I love the songs in that movie. It would be really cool to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Be nice to have people go, hey, you know who wrote those songs? Like, be that.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be the bit of knowledge that someone gets to have a flex at parties with.
I still feel that way about the song that Brett won the Oscar for. I think, wow, that feels just like a great musical theater song, but it's very funny. It's got a great melody to it.
Yeah.
It's so Brett in a way.
Yeah.
He's not compromising.
Yeah.
And I love like kind of telling people, hey, you know, Brett won an Oscar for that song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never met those guys, but God, I'd love to. They're so good.
They're so good. I met, it was so long ago now, you know, when they first came out and were at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Yeah, and everyone was like, what is happening?
Yeah, did they just blow up really quick? Was that the deal?
Yeah, they just kind of, like, I'd heard that they, from my recollection, I remember, I think they'd hit it big in Edinburgh and a few of our friends had performed with them and went, Jesus, like, you should see these guys. And then they came to Melbourne. And I remember we were on a bill at Charlie Pickering and Michael Chamberlain's old room, and they were just sitting there on stools playing these really gentle, intricate, funny songs without giving up much, instead of the bouncing around, you know, everyone. And then suddenly it was like, oh, you can do it this way. Like, that's kind of what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they changed so much. What did I watch? I've been watching that Tyka and Reese Darby show, Flag Means Death.
Right, yep.
Which got cancelled, I think. Just got cancelled. But I'm halfway through the second season. It's so great.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see how mainstream popular the Kiwi sense of humour is now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think you can point it all back to the Flight of the Conchords, probably
opening
their
the
early shows.
Yeah.
And Tyka was part of that as well.
Yeah.
And Reese was, obviously. It's so interesting to me that little crew are now almost the mainstream voice of comedy across the world.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know,
as soon as Tyka added it, grafted it onto Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah,
you know,
it's kind of everywhere.
It's everywhere. Do you, I haven't watched that yet, but I'm kind of saving. I heard that it was just one I'd never gotten onto, and then Reservation Dogs came to an end.
Is that done too?
Yeah,
yeah,
but
that's next on my list.
That comes to a natural conclusion.
Okay,
like they just went, this is where the story ends, and it's like, you know what? I would have loved to have spent another 3 or 4 seasons with these characters, but I felt very satisfied where it landed. It's like, yep, this is the perfect place for it to come to an end. What We Do in the Shadows is coming up to its final season.
Yeah, I've been watching that too. Which it's funny how much of their stuff I've been really absorbing over the last few years.
Yeah, no, I get it. So I'm kind of holding This Flag Means Death as, okay, when once that's done, now at least I've got that I can go to.
I'm loving it, man. It's, again, it's, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen that aesthetic. You know, I loved Pirates of the Caribbean when it first came out. And then there was almost pirate overkill for a few years.
Yes.
And we kind of got sick of it. But the swashbuckling aesthetic is so cool. The actors are doing their best work. I think Taika and Reese are doing the performances of their lifetime.
Right.
I really think that there's so much going on with their characters. They're able to be dramatic and hilarious and incredibly sweet and romantic and funny. And they do action scenes. There's lots of sword fighting. They're doing, I mean, it would be the dream gig to do, where you get to do all those things. You're sort of the leading man, but you're also the comic foil. And, it's great. It's a Trojan horse of a show too, where it gets you in by being a pirate show, but really it's about other stuff.
Yeah,
it's about a lot more.
Maybe I won't wait until the end of What We Do in the Shadows. You've sold it. You sold it really well. Before we finish up, what's the last album that you listened to?
Oh, great question. Let me have a look at my Spotify, because I've been listening to a fair bit lately.
Are you an album guy or a song guy?
Album.
Yep.
Album guy. But the last three things that I've listened to, Jonathan Richman, who's also funny.
Yes.
From the Modern Lovers and also from his solo career. Anyone who's not familiar with him, if you've seen the film There's Something About Mary, he is the singer, songwriter, narrator of that
movie.
He completely pops up multiple times singing songs that relate to the plot and some of his originals. Josh Earle made me a playlist of his favorite Jonathan Richman songs. So
what a legend.
Yeah, so I've been listening to that a lot. Air, the French electronic duo.
Yep.
Air, I've been listening to Moon Safari a lot.
God, that's a good album.
It's a damn good album.
Yeah.
It's a blast. And just something, whenever I'm flying, if I'm on a plane, I largely want to listen to gentle instrumental music so I can read at the same time and just chill.
Yeah.
And so Air and Kerrang! Bin are the two people I've been listening to a lot, because it's just very chill, kind of repetitive, borderline lounge music. It's got a lot of texture to it. And there's a Perth band called Pond that I really like. They're sort of, they would hate hearing this, but I have to say it to give them context. They're sort of in the Tame Impala world. Some of the members of this band play in the Tame Impala live band, the touring band.
Yep.
Kevin Parker from Tame Impala has produced some of their albums and drummed for them a little bit. And they're kind of psychedelic pop, I suppose, psychedelic pop rock. And I was just in Perth and I was walking around Perth listening to Pond, wearing a Pond t-shirt, feeling like this is where I'm supposed to be.
I'm in the pond.
I'm in the pond.
Yeah, the Perth pond. Yeah.
What about you?
I have been listening to the latest album by The Smile, which is, Cam and I were talking about that before we started recording. And so I listened to the podcast Dissect, hosted by Cole Kucher, who dug into Radiohead's In Rainbows, which I had not listened to in years, to be honest. And he gave me, I think it's the best podcast I've ever listened to. And it's the first one that's actually, I felt moved.
Is it song by song?
Song by song.
So every episode is one song?
Yeah. So that's he gave a history. So he gives a, one episode's a brief history, you know, because there's, you know, he's got listeners who haven't listened to Radiohead, so he gives a history, then he goes song by song, and he breaks it to see, I'm fascinated by how music works, but I don't have the language for it. And so he explains things in a way where he'll say, you know, he'll count you in. You know, normally a song has this measure of 1, 2, 3, 4, and then he'll explain the bass will come in at 2 and 4, and then he'll kind of count you through and show you the bass coming in at, you know, 3, you know, but just for 3. And then and then he did his interpretation of the lyrics and what the album is essentially attempting to achieve. So then the Smiles album came out, and even though it just kind of feels like it goes quite well with In Rainbows, it feels like it's been a good segue from In Rainbows into this. So I've been listening to that. I listened to the Fred Again album, Volume 1, which a friend gave to me.
Becky's a big fan of Fred Again.
Really? I'll have to find something of men doing good things and add Fred Again to it. So really send her over the edge. And there was something, a friend gave it to me for a specific reason, and gave it to me as a vinyl. And I hadn't had time to actually listen to it, and then over the weekend played it a few times in a row. And it was an interesting emotional experience. It's like it kind of really takes you through a wide range of feelings and then lands you in a nice place. And I guess what's the other album? I've been listening to, I'm trying to listen to albums, you know, like properly. And specifically albums that I haven't been totally aware of in the past. And I've been listening to, where is it? Massive Attack's album.
Wow.
God damn it.
Yeah, I've never really gone in on Massive Attack. There's a few of those sort of bands that I know songs, but yes. I've never listened to the full thing. Massive Attack and Portishead and stuff are a little bit blind spots for me.
Protection. So, so funnily enough, when in the 90s, I had Blue Lines and I had Portishead's Dummy. And I had a 5-disc Stackman stereo.
Great.
And you could set up a disc to play for your alarm. So I would go to, I spent one summer, must have been maybe 97, 98. I had one summer where I went to bed listening to Portishead's Dummy, and I would wake up to Massive Attack's Blue Lights.
That's fun. Yeah, I mean, it's a great vibe, those sort of, I love that sort of music.
Yes. So it's been fun to kind of get into that.
Is it like,
Is it trip-hop?
Trip-hop, yeah.
I'm really bad with all of that stuff.
It's a genre name I never really say out loud, but yeah, trip-hop. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else is there? Sia used to play in a band that was sort of in that... used to sing in a band that was sort of in that vein.
Yeah, she used to play Sundays in Adelaide. We'd go and see Sia playing down at the... I think it was the Stag. Was it the Stag? Craig Egan will be listening to this podcast at some point post Fringe. He'll get in touch with me.
Was it Sia solo, or was she with?
No, she was with
Zero
a band.
7 or something.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, it's really cool sounding stuff.
Yeah,
I love it. I should go in harder on that too. I do that exact same thing that you do, where I kind of set myself a project.
Yeah,
like, I'm going to get into this
year. Yeah.
This will be the year I do this. I haven't got a musical one at the moment. I need a musical project to get into, but I have given myself the task of watching all of the X-Files from start to finish.
Great.
And so far loving it.
Where are you up to?
About 3/4 of the way through the first season.
Oh, great.
Early days, yeah.
So I'm going to mention a writer who I won't even tell you which seasons he turns up in. He only writes 4 episodes. And I think they're 4 of the most important episodes of television because of what he does. And I won't even tell you what the episodes are. But the writer is Darren Morgan.
Darren Morgan.
So just keep an eye out for his name.
Okay.
And they are some of the, like, I even now will go back and watch, you know, I feel like watching a Darren Morgan episode.
Yeah, wow.
And they're subversive and they're clever, very funny, and sometimes quite moving.
That's the thing I'm loving about the show so far, is that it is hitting all of those tones for me. It's funny, it's a bit dark, it's moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very fun. And so far, season one, I mean, they're still figuring out what the show is, but it's funny how you can watch an episode sometimes and within 30 seconds you can go, oh, okay, so this is them doing The Thing.
Yes.
Or this is them doing 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yep.
This is The Shining.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of like almost parodying movies a little bit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I suppose that drops away as the seasons progress, but early days you can sort of see directly what the references are.
Yeah, yeah. You'll get Vince Gilligan episodes.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always known that he wrote on it, and he wrote episodes that starred Bryan Cranston and stuff. So that'll be pretty fun.
The unfortunately, the culture changed. So when they brought back the X-Files, I'm angry at QAnon for a lot of things. And more important things than this, but they kind of ruined the X-Files.
Yeah, the idea of conspiracies and it goes straight to the top.
That wasn't a, you know, voting Republican, you know, Trump thing. It was a small part of life who was, you know, part of society who were really worried about things, and then it became this mainstream thing, and then then they ruined it. So then when they bring back the X-Files, it's like, well, now Fox Mulder's awful. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like heaps of white dudes who think these things. But back then, he's the guy that they send down into the bottom of the FBI, throwing his pencils up at the at the ceiling. You know?
Yeah.
It's funny. I think there's an episode where it's anyway, you know what? You should discover the X-Files and not have me banging on about my thoughts. But when you've watched stuff, let me know.
Yeah, I will, for sure.
Maybe we should do an X-Files episode.
That would be
fun. Maybe when you get a few seasons in.
I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah.
Even the episodes that have been a little cheesy or maybe not quite as suspenseful as others, I'm still just so happy that I'm watching it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've been watching it after I do shows. So, you know, Perth. I do a show and then come
43 minutes
to my home, back to my hotel.
Yeah, they're invariably standalone.
Yeah,
so you can just watch it and go.
Yeah,
feel like you've had a good meal. Go to bed.
Totally.
And also, can't underestimate the importance of Scully.
Oh, Scully's amazing.
You know, like to have that type of character played by, you know, like, she's Gillian Anderson is beautiful, but she's not Melrose Place.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like she's beautiful in her own right. I mean, you just didn't see her on TV.
Yeah, it's I mean, they're both pretty fantastic. It's pretty cool. It'll be fun to kind of watch them get hotter and hotter as the seasons progress as well, because at the moment they're still a little bit dorky, I think.
Yeah.
Gillian Anderson's 24 in season one, and she's just out of theater.
Yeah.
And David Duchovny would be 29 or something like that. And they're both a little dorky. But even in the press shot on the Disney Plus banner for X-Files, they're way hunkier and beautiful. So it's going to be funny to watch them just get sexier.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, it's this mainstream television show that everyone's like, oh, what's this? And then it just got this proper momentum, and then you know, it is they're kind of dorky leads, and then soon you know they're on the cover in suggestive poses for Rolling Stone.
It would have happened really quickly too, huh?
yeah it was a proper mania, and
so I remember watching it at the time and just loving it, but I never watched all of it.
Yeah,
and I think I maybe only started, you know, later, like season 4 or 5 or something.
Right.
This is an exciting time for me.
It was used to record it on the VHS and come home and, you know, would record 20 minutes before and 20 minutes after to make sure that you didn't miss any of it, because awesome. You could never trust the station to put it on at the time that it was meant to be on. All right. Hey, we should finish up, but you're about to, you finished Perth.
Yep.
So what are the tour dates from here?
Oh, man. Thanks for asking. I'm in Adelaide very soon, from the 27th of February to the 2nd of March at Rhino Room. That's your stomping ground.
The beautiful Rhino Room.
And I would love people to come to that. I haven't played in Adelaide in a long time, just I think COVID and, and you know, it's been hard to kind of travel around the last couple of years. So I'm a bit nervous about Adelaide because it's been a while, but I would love it if people would come to those shows.
Yep.
And then after that, I've got Canberra, Melbourne, Brisbane, Sydney and Newcastle. So it's a pretty big run with this show. And I'm really looking forward to it. But I think those early shows, like in Adelaide especially, you'll be seeing I think it'll be exciting. It'll be an exciting energy because I'll be still trying to remember it.
Far out.
And sometimes I'm getting the lyrics wrong and the real lyrics are behind me on the karaoke video.
Damn. Damn. I did think I you know what? I wanted to ask about that, but if it hadn't been a problem, I didn't want to incept you and put that idea in your head.
It's happened a few times.
So it's happened a few times, and now I feel comfortable talking about it.
And then people have laughed, and I've gone, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And then I've had to turn around and sing off the screen for a few lines and get back into it.
That's all right, though, but that's why you go and see the live show, because it's a living, breathing entity, you know? It's and everyone's involved in it, so that's funny. That's very funny.
Yeah.
All right, well, the show's great, and where can people, if you know, so they don't have to rewind, is there, what's your website?
I don't have one, but you can go to my Instagram, which is at @IamCameronJames. Or livenation.com.au to get tickets.
Yeah, and find out when you're going to be there.
Yeah.
The show's great, and I think what's exciting about it is if the show didn't improve from here, you have a winner, but it's really early, and it's just going to get better. So I think, you know, it's really exciting to see the way it's moving and coming together, and it's coalescing in such a quick way. You know, I can't wait to get to see it if I can get down to Melbourne or Sydney, you know.
Thank you, and thanks for all your help with it too. You've been really good at pushing me in the right direction.
Mate, I love it. I love it. I love sitting around talking about this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
All right, let's go and get something to eat.
Thanks for
coming and talking about everything on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Hammer. And check out Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, mate.
When it comes to cinemas.
Like, you know, and Jack Black, if you're listening, we're good to go. Fun chat, right? He is a lot of fun to hang out with. He's very good at podcasting, and once again, his show is looking like a winner. Make sure, if you want to check out the dates, go to his Instagram page, I Am Cameron James, and you will be able to find details. But the next stop is the Adelaide Fringe, so he will be there pretty soon, actually. Like in roughly 2 weeks, he'll be opening. I think it might even be exactly 2 weeks. What's today? The 13th? Oh, yeah. Yeah. 27th. There you go. So go and check him out. The Rhino Room is always a fun venue to see some of the best comedians in the country, but also see some of the comedians that are about to become the best comedians. So I think Cameron's in the best comedians section now, and this show will solidify that. So thank you very much for joining me today and listening to this podcast. I'm about to release the final few chapters of The Ultimate. That is the ongoing long-form story on the Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted section of this podcast. It's been recording these chapters since, I think, about October. So I thought we'll do the last few chapters all as one big finale. Thank you to everyone who's been enjoying it. And even more so, a big shout out to the people who have emailed me and said they're going to wait until it's finished and then they're going to binge it. And finally, you can catch up. So that will be released this week as well. So once again, The Ultimate, which is, and maybe you haven't heard it yet. So, you know, because you might have looked at the artwork and thought, I prefer the interviews, etc. But if you're keen, it is a story about a faded rock and roll star in Melbourne who is confronted by a homeless man who tells him that this world is not real and they come from another place and they're in this world to make sure they can solve the multiverse. First written back in 2019, and I thought I'd put it out there and see what you think, and the reaction's been fantastic. It's been really satisfying. So thank you for listening, and thank you to all the people that have written to me and discussed their theories on what's going on and told me what they've enjoyed and just expressed how much they've loved it. So thank you. All right, don't forget, Cameron James touring Australia, Adelaide, starting the 27th of Feb. The Ultimate coming out this week, possibly even tomorrow. And I will be back with you next week when we will continue our best ofs. That's right. We will be continuing my slow rollout of my best ofs for 2023. I hope you're well and look after yourself until then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.